This is The End User, episode 202 for Thursday, October 8th, Bezel Reduction Technology. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Mon. Chris, it's great to be back. I missed a show.
Yeah, and we had a wonderful guest, Rob H. from AV Rant Podcast on. He's a very easy guy to talk to, so that was a good show, even though you were gone there.
Well, yeah, I'm glad that somebody could fill in and that you guys could talk, but I'm glad to be back now because all the real news has come in these past 2 weeks. I mean, the real news, the Apple news already happened last month, but this week we got maybe one of the biggest, definitely one of the biggest Windows or Microsoft announcements ever.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we've also got some news from Google. Since we skipped last week, we would have talked about it then, but they've got some new Nexus devices coming out. We've got a boatload of devices from Microsoft. And Taylor, that it's devices from Microsoft. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Laptops from Microsoft.
Yeah, even. Laptops and tablets and phones from Microsoft. You know, they've been doing this for some time with the Surface Pro now, but I feel like the indication of releasing all of these devices is that they're kind of turning a corner in producing their own hardware. I feel like this is kind of a shift.
Well, it's definitely a big move. It's a big statement. So, yeah, I think that we should get into it. Let's not leave the people on their toes. I mean, so one thing that everybody was expecting is the announcement of the Surface Pro 4, which is a whole lot like the Surface Pro 3.
Yeah, and it's got some incremental improvements, but for the most part, what you're seeing is, you know, some new hardware under the hood. We've got a new fingerprint sensor on the keyboard for the Surface Pro 4, and they're just kind of updating a lot of the internals. For the most part, it is exactly what you would expect the next version of the Surface to look like, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But on the inside, I'd say those internal changes are pretty significant.
Right. So we've got the Intel Skylake update, which I know you've been waiting for on the Apple side of the fence there, right?
Yeah, well, we've yet to see that on Apple, but, you know, it's coming eventually.
So again, if you look at, you know, some of the pictures of this device and some of the video of what's going on here and the hands-on and all of that, you've got the same 12.3-inch display that fits in the same footprint as the older 12-inch Surface Pro 3. So they were able to thin the bezel out and get a little bit more screen in there. So that's good to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's got the keyboard attachment that you can add to it. It's got the pen like it's always had. They've improved the pen. They're saying the pen has 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity, which I'm assuming is more than the last one. I actually don't know what the last one was.
Yeah, to me, that just sounds like, I mean, they just built in some sort of binary pressure sensitivity system in there, and now they really want to compete with the Apple Pencil.
Yeah, that's probably true. So I think we're burying the lead a little bit because that's pretty much all we can say about the new Surface Pro 4. It's more of the same. I think the keyboard is slightly improved. The screen is slightly improved in that they were able to fit a little bit more in there. Looks like they've improved the trackpad a little bit, but, you know, it's kind of more of the same. But with those updated internals, which are likely to give you a much higher battery life and some better performance out of this device.
Well, what I think is interesting about those internals is that you can actually now get the Surface Pro 4 with a fan or without a fan.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's a good
distinction. The lowest-end model uses Intel's new Core M series. Well, not so new anymore, but it uses the Core M series, which can run an 86 series processor without a fan, the same way the Apple MacBook does. Right. Everything above that, you get more power out of the Surface Pro 4, but they've got to throw a fan in there to dissipate the heat.
Right, and that makes sense. You know, with some more performance, it's going to heat up a little bit more, and you're going to need a fan. That's unavoidable, I think. Unless at some point we switch over to ARM processors, which it seems like is less likely to happen the more time goes on. We've kind of...
Right, well, Microsoft tried that.
Right, we tried that experiment.
It didn't work out too well.
And I guess it didn't go so well with their original Surface, which I still have that Surface 1 floating around here somewhere. And, you know, they've backed off on some of the tablet features of Windows 10. And, you know, I feel like that may be to the detriment a little bit of the tablet experience of a tablet-only Windows 10 device. But, you know, I also don't have one either, so it's really hard to say, you know, from a distance. But what you do gain... You know, we've talked about this a little bit before. What you do gain with the kind of full version of a real, like, professional operating system is you can run things like Photoshop and, you know, real professional software that the iPads of the world and the Surfaces of old just cannot have the ability to run, right?
Right. I mean, the software on iPads and on any pretty much... real tablet-like device is going to depend on whatever ecosystem it's built on, what operating system it's running. But these run Windows with all of the compatibility that goes with it.
Right. So you really do get a lot of bang for your buck there, since, you know, there's however many years of Windows apps out there. But, you know, I do get this feeling sometimes nowadays that I use very little of the desktop applications anymore. You know, sure, okay, if I'm writing software or something like that, you know, I'll open a text editor or Visual Studio, and I'll open a Photoshop sometimes. And, of course, to do the podcast, I need to have a bunch of tools like Audacity and XSplit and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, for the regular person out there, they don't really need all of that, right?
No, not everybody does, but I think Microsoft idea is, you know, everybody needs something, or they might eventually need something that runs on Windows the best.
Yeah, true, and you think about, there are plenty of alternatives to Office, but I feel like Office is still a best-in-class experience.
Well, Office is available on all those platforms now, including the iPad.
Well, that's a fair point. I just mean making a distinction between the full desktop version of Office and the iPad version of Office. But, you know, I'm not really sure because I haven't really been in the situation where I'm a student or whatever and using an iPad and taking notes. You know, I'm not really sure how well that'll work.
I mean, it works differently for different people, but, yeah. You know, it's nice to have a little extra power there.
Yeah, for sure. And for, I feel like the huge win for the Surface Pro in general, and now just getting bumped up with the Surface Pro 4, is for professionals who wanted some kind of tablet, but wanted to still use their professional tools. I feel like that's actually a fairly large subset of people. I feel like there's a lot of like software developers out there that would get on board with this.
Yeah, I'll totally agree with that. And I will even say, though I may deny it later, that the Surface Pro 4 accomplishes that a lot better than the iPad Pro does.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. I mean, you can't really. It would have to be an OS X tablet for that to be the case, right?
Right.
Cool. All right. Well, Taylor, we really are bearing the lead. I think the most exciting thing that I have seen this week from Microsoft is their announcement of this new laptop hybrid device, which I think is very, very interesting. And it is called the Surface Book, and it's a ultrabook-ish kind of laptop-looking thing, and it's got a 13.5-inch display. It's starting at about $1,500. So it is indeed in the higher end of the market. If you had a spectrum of devices from a phone up to a desktop computer with multiple monitors, this is further up the scale than the Surface Pro is, but less on that scale than an Ultrabook is. So it's one of those kind of devices where you can rip off the screen. But what they've done, I think, is really interesting. And the keyboard bottom of this thing looks really nice. It looks like it wasn't an afterthought. Kind of the Surface Pro, the keyboard attachment kind of seems like an afterthought. It's like tablet first, and then you add keys to it, and maybe you can type well on that. But this really seems like it's made to be in a category with laptops, and then the screen can also get ripped off of the dock, and you can reverse it, and you know that kind of thing. And I really think that this is the best hybrid device that I've seen up to this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of it. I agree with that. To me, this is like a proof of concept flagship device. This is
a little bit, yeah.
This is what the Chromebook Pixel is to regular Chromebooks.
Sure, yeah.
This is that device for Surface style tablets.
Sure, that makes some sense. I really think one of the cool things about it is that the keyboard attachment, or you know, I'm not even sure like what terms to use to describe this thing, because I feel like we've never really seen a device that is quite in this class. We've seen things like it. I've definitely seen keyboard docks that have an extra GPU in the dock before. I've definitely seen that. But I've never seen anything quite like this. And I think that's exciting that there is a little bit more processing power inside of the keyboard bottom than there is in the actual tablet that rips off of the top of the attachment. That seems like a really good idea. I remember there were some Android tablets some time ago that tried to achieve something like this.
Right. I mean, but I still don't understand how Microsoft did this. The way that the Android tablets would try to do it is that it would run Windows on the bottom and then the screen would have an Android processor inside it. So it would be two separate systems. Can you explain how they combine the processing power for this device?
No, well, I don't know. I'm sure that's insanely technical, but as I understand it, the only thing that's in the bottom is the GPU. So that gets plugged in when you dock it. But when you rip the screen off, you've got a Core i5 or Core i7 just in the tablet part. And they've got some integrated graphics on the Intel chip, right? You know, we've talked about the Intel integrated graphics before, and I assume it would be that same thing where they've got this low-powered integrated graphics that are on the chip die, and they've got a real GPU in the keyboard attachment. So that would be my best guess, but I'm not entirely sure of all of that.
Okay, well, I'm still confused.
So one thing that was a little odd, that struck me as a little bit odd, is when you close this thing, the hinge is at a little bit of an angle. So if you've got the screen backwards and you close it, and that means the screen is facing you with the device, the laptop-like device closed, then the screen tilts up a little bit at you. But when you're using it kind of in ultrabook mode, or laptop mode, I guess, where the screen, you know, it's a clamshell, it folds in on itself, there's a little bit of space in between the keyboard and the screen. And I don't know if that's meant to protect the screen, but that just feels odd to me.
Yeah, it's very weird. I think it probably just has to come up. It has to do with this new hinge,
yes,
that they built, which is quite ingenious.
Yeah, it really is.
But it has this one drawback in that it doesn't close all the way.
Yeah, or the top of the screen makes contact with the bottom of the keyboard when it's closed, but the hinge is wider than the rest, than the thinnest part of the top of the screen and the keyboard. So it just has this gap between the two. So it really does close all the way. It's just a gap when it is closed, which is just perhaps a little strange.
It closes all the way in the front, but
right,
the gap
exactly.
is all the way along the side still.
Right, exactly. So anyway, they're also touting that this device is going to outperform just about anything in its size category. So anything in a 13.5-inch size category, this device will be able to outperform it. And presumably that's true because, you know, they've got the latest Core i5 and Core i7 in there.
Presumably it's true, yeah, if you pay for all of the upgrades. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Up against the most recent processors in any other computer with the same upgrades, I don't know. I think I really take those claims with a grain of salt. You know, not that its performance isn't impressive, but if they're saying it's going to beat everything in its category, that's not going to last for long.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's just the latest Intel chipset and, you know, like a decent GPU, and it just happens to be the latest. And other laptops that also have the latest and similar specs will also perform just as well, is my guess.
Right. So during their keynote, they compared it to the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display. And they said it was twice as powerful. And later it came out, what they meant was the top-of-the-line Surface Book is twice as powerful as the base model MacBook Pro.
Whoops.
In graphics, specifically graphics.
Oh, yeah, that is a little misleading.
Which is an apples-to-oranges comparison, because the base model MacBook Pro has integrated graphics, and this has dedicated.
Right. Well, anyway, we've said this before. We've kind of come to a point where if you spend a decent amount of money on any laptop whatsoever, you're probably going to have a pretty good experience. It's really hard to go wrong these days in buying computing equipment, as long as you don't really, really cheap out on these things.
Yeah, it's your money goes a lot farther than it used to.
Oh, yeah.
And competition is tough. So, yeah, it's a good time.
So anyway, I wanted to mention we mentioned the screen was 13.5 inches. That's going to be a 3,000 by 2,000 display. And this thing is, pre-orders are starting today. That's October 7th, and we're going to get a shipping date, if they stick to it, of 10/26. So we'll have it. We'll have this thing in people's hands by the end of the month, it seems, and just in time for Christmas, it strikes me.
I think that the Chromebook Pixel is 3,000 by 2,000. It's at least the same aspect ratio.
Yeah, is that what aspect ratio is that?
3:2.
It's 3:2. Yeah, so that's notably a. I feel like most laptops I see out there that aren't from Apple are 16:9 for whatever reason.
Right. I think it's because...
Obviously, it's 3:2.
Those displays are cheap.
Yeah.
But a lot of laptops are still 16:10, and that's what Apple does.
Yeah, that's what the MacBook Air is, for example.
Apple did release a device that was 3:2. It was the original iPhone.
By the way, I like that it's 3,000 by 2,000, and I'm scratching my head what the aspect ratio is. That's pretty that's pretty dull of me, isn't it?
I wasn't going to say dull. I was just going to wait for you to catch up.
No, I'm here now. Don't worry.
That's good, because I'm already in the future.
So, all around, I think, you know, I don't want to get into the real nitty-gritty details. We've got some links in the show notes about, you know, the memory options. You can really load this thing up, but I just wanted to mention that it'll be shipping on 10/26, and the absolute base model of the device is $1,499, so about $1,500. So, again, definitely in the premium segment of the market.
It certainly is, just like the Chromebook Pixel was.
Yeah, just like the Pixel. So anyway, I'm really impressed with the things they've shown off. The Surface Pro 4 looks like a decent update, you know, and what else do you expect from the Surface Pro? You know, I'm not sure they can deliver on a huge amount of innovation there, but it's nice to see that they have, at very least, updated it, and they added a fingerprint reader. That's nice. And then the Surface Book is really imaginative, and I think that they've gone about solving a problem, this problem, in a different way, and I'm really intrigued to see how that turns out for people.
It is certainly a unique device, especially with this detachable screen, with this new hinge. It looks great.
Yeah. They've hit it out of the park. You know, I've noticed in the journalism surrounding the Microsoft event, we've got a unprecedented amount of positive attitudes toward Microsoft with the announcements here. And I really think that speaks a lot for what they're trying to do now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very strange year for Microsoft. They cut a lot of divisions.
Yeah,
well, their company, they downsized quite a bit. They released this new operating system, which had a mixed reception. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but some people are really interested in it, and some people are saying, well, I like Windows 7. And but no, you know, Chris, we're not even halfway done with Microsoft's hardware announcements.
Yes.
So we got to keep going on this.
Yeah, we better start booking it. You know, we're not going to afterburners it, but
we got to cruise on through here. All right. So the next thing that we heard about is their new flagship Lumia phones. So they unveiled two models with several iterations of the Lumia 950 and the 950 XL.
Right. So they've gone in this kind of similar split that Apple took, in that the 950 is a 5.2-inch device and the 950 XL is a 5.7-inch device. And
so you mean Apple and Samsung and Google.
Well, yeah, pretty much everybody, right?
And HTC. Sure. And LG. And Huawei. And Sony. Like, you make a big phone, and then you make a really big phone.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you're right. That seems to be what everybody is doing in the industry. So
actually, Sony is leading the innovation here, because they made a really big phone, and then a medium-sized phone.
Yeah, I really wish some manufacturers would make some phones that were a little bit smaller. I guess 5.2 inches is a pretty decent size. But yeah, to have some of the Note models have been ridiculously large. But I feel like 5.2 and 5.7 is a decent split between a smaller and larger device.
Chris, we've got to do a best of show where it's just clips of us talking about what is a ridiculous size for a phone? Because
I am sure
over the last couple of years, those opinions have changed quite a bit on yours, mine, and everyone else.
I am absolutely sure that previously on the podcast, at some point many years ago, I said that the Moto X was ridiculously large at, I think it was 4.2 or 4.3 inches.
And now you say 5.2, and that's pretty good.
It's okay.
I'm pretty sure we can go back and find ourselves talking about the Dell Streak, which at 5 inches was the most preposterous thing we could possibly imagine.
Oh yeah, we were not correct about that, were we?
No.
Yeah, well, that was a really interesting device too, but we won't get sidetracked by that. But yeah, you're right. What I think has happened is that a lot of the devices that were, I remember the Toshiba, what was it, G1, that was a Windows Mobile device, had a fairly large screen. And what we've done over time here is we've reduced the bezel on these things, so they're nearly pure screen. And, you know, the phones in the past had this huge bezel on them, so a 5-inch screen meant you were using a 6-inch phone or something, or it's quite possible I'm coloring the past, but I feel like these things used to be just larger in general compared to the size of the actual screen.
So are you saying that bezel reduction is some sort of unapplauded technology which is driving the advance of our phones?
Yeah, I guess I am.
I'm not sure how I feel about that assessment, but certainly its effect is plainly visible for anyone to see.
Yeah. Okay, so Taylor.
Yes.
Lumia 950, octa-core processor, 950XL. That's backwards. So the 950 has a hexa-core processor, and the XL has a octa-core processor. So we're talking about 6 and 8 cores that are able to do parallel processing on these phones, which is just totally ridiculous. And that
still seems excessive to me. There may come a day. I'm hedging my bets here. There may come a day where 8 processors are important in a phone, but today is not that day.
Yeah, today is not that day, and it's definitely overkill. It's definitely future looking to have that, you know, and all the modern flagship Android devices have these kind of processors in them now too. So that's just the way things are headed.
Another future looking feature is that it comes with USB-C for storage and data transfer. So the same as the new MacBook, except these are phones. We've seen a small handful of phones that start to use USB-C, but we'll probably begin to see a lot more.
Yeah, that's going to be the new... I remember we've talked about some trends in the industry at some point, and wireless AC at some point was the new thing that you could possibly have in a phone. And we saw it once, and it kept popping up, obviously, because it's nice to have. But yeah, USB-C is that thing, and I'm glad that Apple has chosen to use it as well.
Not in their phones.
Right, but in their in the MacBook and what else uses it? Something else uses it. Their pen, the pencil.
No, that's Lightning 2.
Oh, is that Lightning 2? Okay.
Yeah, it's only the MacBook.
Okay, so it's only the new MacBook, the new MacBook.
Right. So anyway, some more features about the Lumia 950 models is that they come with 3 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigabytes of storage standard, and I believe they have micro SD card support that can support a whole lot of storage and Qi wireless charging.
Yes.
Along with a 20 megapixel pure view camera with a triple LED flash.
Yeah, so that seems pretty cool. It's really just it's everything you would expect from a top of the line phone. Yeah, it's not something we've seen out of the Lumia line of phones in some time. I don't remember when I last looked at a Lumia phone and I thought, "Oh, that's cutting edge." This is really that, and that's really really refreshing to see. I feel like this is absolutely the device that a lot of Windows Phone fans have been waiting for.
I don't know. I think in terms of screen and camera technology, Nokia was always really pushing the limits with their Lumia devices. But and in terms of specs, I think these are certainly more capable devices.
Yeah,
but,
well,
we're not seeing any groundbreaking technology. I mean, like, you know, Nokia was doing things with Carl Zeiss lenses that nobody was doing. You know, they invented a new coating for their OLED displays to reduce glare.
Yeah, well, I think so they were doing that at the time, and I feel like Windows Phone went into this kind of hibernation as Windows 10 became a reality for Windows 8.1 devices. And I feel like we're finally here now, and this is the flagship phone of the launch of Windows 10, and it has the specs accordingly. So they kind of hadn't released a seriously flagship phone for quite some time because they were kind of waiting on Windows 10 to happen.
Right. Now, the Windows 10 announcement happened a while ago. It's been available on computers for a while. Are there any big features of Windows 10 for phones that were a surprise to you?
So not really that it was a surprise, because what they've done is they've got this insider preview program, which I actually haven't been a part of. I don't know if my HTC 8X is compatible with it. It is a Windows Phone 8.x phone, so I guess it should be, but I don't think the preview program was available for it. And, you know, that's not my daily driver anymore either, but I have it at home and it works on Wi-Fi, so that's fine. But so all of the features that we're looking at in Windows 10, we've kind of already seen, because they've been in an extremely public beta of sorts for a long time now. And by the way, I should mention, I keep catching myself in saying Windows Phone. It's no longer Windows Phone. It's Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah, I tried really hard to avoid that.
So it's Windows 8 Phone and it's Windows 10 Mobile. So anyway.
Right, and next month it'll be something else.
Right, next time it'll be, you know, Video Phone or something. So anyway, we've got some links in the show notes that detail a little bit more about these devices, but just aesthetically, I think they're pretty gorgeous looking. What do you think of just the body of the phone? I think they've got this minimalism that the iPhone also captures, and a lot of Android devices also capture, and I feel like they've got some pretty good hardware under the hood, and I'm extremely positive about these devices.
The hardware design, to me, is fine. It's completely unremarkable. I think if it didn't have the Microsoft logo on both the front and the back of the device, no one would have any idea what kind of phone you were using.
Yeah, no. And they probably might still not know, just because, you know, people out there, they don't necessarily know these things. I feel like they're more likely to think that you're using a Microsoft Android device than, or they'll ask you what kind of iPhone that is or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so these things aren't quite available yet. The 950 is going to be available. Both of the 950s, the 950 and 950 XL, will be available in November, and the basement price for one of these things is $550. So these are indeed the flagship premium phones and are definitely not bargain devices. Although we're seeing a lot more phones come out that have some pretty darn good features for some pretty basement prices these days. So that'll be interesting to see. If I'm sure that price will come down going forward, but you know, the iPhone's still more than that unlocked, isn't it?
The iPhone is about that price. I mean, it I think starts at 600, but I don't even know.
Okay, well, we'd have to go look. We'll go look at some point and see what that price point is, because I feel it's going to become more common now that a lot of the carriers, at least in the United States around us, are starting to go off contract more often than they used to. So I feel like we're going to have to kind of resensitize our bearings for how much these things actually cost. So anyway, that's the word on the brand new Microsoft devices from the Microsoft event. And we've got one more, and we'll talk just kind of briefly about this one, but this is the a new version of the Microsoft Band, and that's going to be $250, and that is a fitness device that has a little actual screen on it. And you know, I've never actually used one of these bands. Have you?
No, I haven't. I thought the first one was a curiosity, but it looked like a clunky, weird thing to have on your wrist. This is nice.
Yeah, better.
But it's a band. It's a fitness band. It is not a smartwatch.
Right. Well, it kind of straddles the line between the two, I guess. I still think it's weird to have it be in the orientation that it's in. You know, so if you look at your wrist as if there were a watch on it and it's on the outside of your wrist, It's going to be vertically aligned, and it's everything's going to be sideways. But if you put it on the inside of your wrist and you pull your fist up towards your face, then it will be horizontal, and you can see the stuff on the screen. So that's always struck me as a little bit weird, and I guess they're continuing with that. But I've seen a lot of people around that seem to like it. But I can't imagine that it's been a huge hit. I don't see regular people talking about it.
What about the original Microsoft Band?
Right.
No, it wasn't a good product. This is a major iteration of the Microsoft Band. You know, this is doing things that it couldn't, and it looks a lot better doing it.
Yeah, it looks a ton better from what we've seen so far. So anyway, I don't want to labor on that. I wanted to get on and go into the news from the Google event. Band is going to be available on October 30th, and it's priced at $250. So we've got a link in the show notes if you are extremely interested in the Microsoft Band. And it's good to see them update that. And I think it just aesthetically looks a lot better. I think that's the biggest takeaway I could tell.
And it's one key feature to try to draw very competitive athletes. The whole presentation for this was targeted at really active people and athletes who compete and like to have a lot of data. This is the first wearable device that can accurately internally measure VO2 max.
Now, I don't even know what that means.
It's the amount of oxygen that you can process at your maximum metabolic rate.
Right. That's usually what they put the mask on you for, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they had to do a lot of mask testing to get that feature.
Right. So I'm sure it's some kind of rather accurate approximation of the actual measurement.
Right. You know, you've got to include your breathing, your heart rate, and track data over time. So it's a pretty complicated measurement to include in a wristwatch. But so that's a neat feature if you are the kind of person who is interested in that type of data.
Yeah, that is really neat. So Taylor, I forgot one more thing on the two Microsoft phones that we talked about earlier. We didn't get into a whole lot of nitty-gritty details, but you asked me earlier about some features of Windows 10 Mobile, and I think one of the more interesting ones potentially is Continuum. You know, and I'm not sure we've even talked about this on the podcast before, but this is the ability for you to plug your phone into something and get a somewhat desktop experience out of your phone. You can even attach a keyboard or whatever. And I think it looks really well done. In this day and age, having devices that are as powerful as we have in our pockets, I feel like you could really get away with a phone and a keyboard and a screen of some kind. And I feel like that's what they're kind of going after with Continuum.
Yeah, they're certainly going after something like that. I would be really surprised if we started seeing, you know, college students who gave up their computer completely anytime soon. It could happen eventually, but I can imagine some use cases for Continuum where maybe, cafes or public spaces would offer, a Continuum port and a screen and a keyboard for people to use just when they're hanging around waiting for stuff. You could put it on airplanes.
Yeah, it depends on a lot of things. Maybe I'm just because this is what I do, but I like to have a desktop and a laptop, and I like the divide between the two for whatever reason. But I don't know. I feel like for a lot of people that the distinction is becoming more and more arbitrary.
Certainly the entire computer industry is against you on that one. pretty much every company is working in some way to break down that divide. And there are there must be a vanishingly small segment of consumers who, like you, prefer to have separate laptops, desktops, tablets, and phones, all for personal consumption.
Yeah. And at least for now, you can use this dock that Microsoft has that has the USB Type-C that we talked about that you can plug into. And that has an HDMI and a DisplayPort out on it. So I don't know. And of course, it's not going to run the full desktop, you know, version of Windows, but it will give you a taskbar and it will give you a kind of desktop experience. So it'll be interesting to see if consumers gravitate toward that. Of course, that's in the same sentence that Android and iOS are far and away the market leaders in the smartphone industry currently.
Now, if you attempt to plug a MacBook into a Continuum dock with a USB-C cable, your computer and or brain may explode.
Yes. Apple has guaranteed this to happen, right?
No, Apple doesn't purposefully make anything break just because you plug stuff into it. Only Samsung does that.
Only Samsung does that. Yeah. So anyway, these, again, something I haven't really used but seems kind of intriguing, and I'd like to see if I can, get some kind of demo of this at some point. That would be cool.
You should go to the brand new flagship Microsoft store in Manhattan.
Yes, I will take a trip up to New York just to see Continuum.
Will you really?
No, probably not, but if I were in New York, I probably would go.
But you could see the Surface Book Pixel.
We're mixing all kinds of things up now. Okay, Taylor, you want to talk about a Pixel device from Google? We can talk about a Pixel device from Google.
Well, this is why I kept saying Chromebook Pixel on the show, because Google has a new Pixel device now, and it's very different from the old one.
Right. It has a... it has a screen resolution of 1x1 pixel.
That would be something.
It's just a square that can be red, green, or blue. That's the only screen you get. No, so this is a 2560x1800 screen at 10.2 inches. And from all accounts, it's kind of a... It's kind of Google's version of the Surface, but it runs Android and is kind of squarish like an iPad and has a keyboard attachment that you can use with it. I don't know. I'm all over the place with that description.
Yeah, so it's an Android tablet. It does not run. It's not a Chromebook. It doesn't run Chrome OS. It runs Android 6.0 Marshmallow, which we're going to talk about in a second, and Chris is going to give his review of. But it's called the Pixel C. It's a 10-inch high DPI Android tablet. Google is selling a detachable keyboard cover that is, really small.
Yeah, it does. They're saying it's a full-size keyboard, but... It does look just small in at least the images we have. So I don't know. I have to get my fingers on it.
Yeah, okay. So the Pixel C is roughly the size of a regular iPad. And it's roughly the price of a regular iPad. And I've used keyboards that work as covers for the iPad. You can call it full size, but it's not full size.
Yeah, it's not really.
It just isn't. You just need a little bit bigger than that. That's all there is to it.
So this device is kind of effectively a the Nexus 9 going forward is actually this 10-inch device, which is a little more aligned with the full-size iPad, isn't it? Of course, I guess I have to preface now by saying that the full-size iPad could be an iPad Pro, right?
Let's not get into that can of worms.
Well, so anyway, from what I can see, the tablet looks pretty nice, and I don't know how far the keyboard will go. Android's not really made to be used with a keyboard and keyboard and finger essentially is what you'd be using, which is always a little bit weird. It looks modern, you know, it's got some modern specs on it. It's got USB type C, which again is something we'll be repeating over and over and over as a bunch of new devices come out. And you know, it starts at $499, so that's pretty competitive, and it looks like it could be a pretty nice device. I think this is going to be the flagship Android tablet, and Android hasn't been the most. I don't think they've been as successful as Apple has been with tablets, but this hope is probably. I'd have to imagine this will give them a little bit of a leg up.
Certainly, if you are in the market for an Android tablet this year, this is the one to get. Wait till November and get this one.
Right.
Okay, but Google, this wasn't the only thing that they released. They also had probably one of their biggest hardware announcements ever. So we've got a lot more to cover.
Oh, yes. I think we'll start out with the actual biggest devices, I think. Pixel C was I feel like it's kind of off on the side in a way that, you know, the Nexus phones are always pretty large announcements. And we've got the next version of their two Nexus phones, and that is the Nexus 5X and the Huawei Nexus 6P. And the 5X is made by LG. So it is the kind of logical successor to actually the phone that I have, the Nexus 5. And the Huawei device is a replacement for the Nexus 6. So just looking at the devices, they share some kind of design language between the two. And I kind of like that they're clearly are two devices that are cut of the same cloth. And one just kind of happens to be smaller and, you know, has a little bit less specs, less intense specs under the hood. But I feel like they're really two devices that just happen to be different screen sizes that are very, very similar underneath and will probably give people a pretty similar experience.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. I mean, they're made by different manufacturers, so
yeah,
there probably will be some minute differences when you're holding them. But, you know, Google designed all these devices, basically, and they are very much controlling the experience. This is pure Android. That's why it's a Nexus device.
Exactly.
And now that applies to the Pixel tablet as well. So these are great. And the other impressive thing here is that they're coming out at a price point that's well below what the new Lumia phones are at. And it's below the iPhone, certainly.
Yeah, by a long shot.
I think the 5X starts at $350 and the 6P starts at $500.
Right. Yeah. $499 for the 6P. That's the unlocked price. But yeah, the 5X is fairly impressive. One of the big differences between the two, other than the larger screen, you know, in that one is 5.7 and one is 5.2. Does that sound familiar?
It does sound familiar.
Huh.
Who else just came out with a large and an extra large?
Well, and you know, everyone, like we were talking about. So, you know, the Google announcement happened before the Microsoft announcement, if you wanted to parse that for what it's worth. But, you know, both of these things have been planned for years. So this is just the way things are going, I suppose.
Then Microsoft's phone doesn't come out for 2 months. Interesting.
It was aliens, I tell you.
No, they were just waiting.
Oh, right. Okay.
The aliens.
The aliens were waiting.
To see what Google and Microsoft.
So the 5X has a 1080p screen, and the 6P has a QHD screen, which honestly, you know, I'm not that big on. I feel like for these devices, 1080p is just fine. I don't really feel the need to have a screen that crazy, and it's gonna, you know, it's gonna impact your the performance of your battery as well. I feel like 1080p is good enough, particularly with the battery technology that we have right now.
Yeah, and so I that's why I really like that Apple has stuck pretty steadfastly to their Retina branding, because once you hit that limit of what your eye can discern when you're looking at it, you know, you're just driving extra pixels for no reason. It's just
right.
extra battery power that you're wasting. Of course, I went out and bought the Apple phone that is Retina Plus, which is meaningless, but it's 1080p. Every screen I have is 1080p right now.
Yeah, that's about right. I've got my monitors are 1080p. My phone's 1080p. So yeah, I think.
But your television's fine. Not.
No, it's four times that.
Although rub it in, Chris. Rub it in.
Well, we've talked about it. I can't use it except for in 1080p.
Ah, but we have news on that later in the show. Man, we have a lot of news this week. We're not even done with the Google announcement. So what else should we say about these phones?
Okay, USB Type-C, as we will see in many, many, many devices going forward. It's on both of these devices. They've got some interesting fast charging technology. Now, I was a little disappointed to see that they're ditching the wireless charging, which I was quite a big fan of.
Yeah, that's an interesting decision. But they must have had to make some engineering decisions that were difficult. And I'm sure that the compromise was worth it to them. But I'm thinking about USB-C now. And so now we're going to start to see more and more Android devices with USB-C versus micro USB.
Yep.
And it's going to create the problem that iPhone users faced 2 years ago. Oh, do you have an Android charger?
Which one?
Yeah. Oh, and I need the new Android charger. No, I have the old Android charger. No, my phone uses the new Android charger. But what'll be really funny is that people with MacBooks, they'll be like, do you have an Android charger?
Yeah.
Or people with Windows phones who've been doing that anyway. But you're gonna have a lot of people talking about new Android charger versus old Android charger. And let me tell you, since I already know, because I'm the Futurist Prime, it's going to last forever, and it's going to be infuriating. And nobody is going to learn to call it USB Type-C. Do you have a USB Type-C charger? What the heck is that?
Yeah, they'll say, oh, that's the one that is reversible, right?
And then somebody will say, wait, my Android charger is reversible?
Yeah, remember when they didn't used to be?
Yeah. So, Chris, when you get a USB Type-C phone, eventually your battery is going to run, and you're going to ask someone if they have the reversible Android charger. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to hand you an Apple charger.
Oh, yeah, or I was thinking they were going to hand me a mini USB cable for some reason. You know, the one they use to charge their BlackBerry or whatever.
That would be hilarious. I might do that just to mess with you.
Yeah,
but it won't happen otherwise.
All right, well, let's move right along in the Google announcements. Again, we've got some links in the show notes. We're already running up against an hour, so we're going to move along and talk a little bit about the new Chromecast. And actually, luckily, there's not that much to talk about with the new Chromecast. I didn't really get a sense of, you know, what all is new in the Chromecast, other than that they've got an audio-specific version of it now that can turn any pair of speakers that has an aux in into a pair of wireless speakers, which is nice. And they've redesigned the Chromecast to be this circular thing that hangs off the back of whatever you're plugging it into.
Right. It's not a stick anymore. It's
right.
It's got a very short cable attached to it. And then I guess it just sort of hangs off the back of this or the side of your TV or your audio system if you bought the audio version, which is the same price with drastically less functionality. But they're still just $35, and they do what they say they're going to do.
Right.
There's a little bit of onboard processing, but really this is not about the hardware. This is just a wireless dongle for sending stuff from your phone or your computer, provided you have the right phone, computer, or software.
Right, and they talked, you know, a bit about they've got a better Wi-Fi antenna that will increase your signal or whatever, but ultimately the whole point of the Chromecast is that it doesn't matter, right? It's just a little thing that you can plug in, and then you can cast your screen, and you can cast content from apps to it. That's always been the important thing, and it can still do that. So I almost feel like if they had tried to add some other stuff to it, you're kind of losing the point of the Chromecast. Now, speaking of losing the point of the Chromecast, here's a pull quote from the article that we're sharing. We're going to see a lot of gorgeous, rich, rendered games released with the Chromecast in mind, such as Angry Birds. And I'm just thinking to myself, well, okay, you know, Angry Birds is not a good example of a extremely rich graphic experience in a game, right? So I think they're playing that up a little bit, and it's just, you know, okay, you can play games on it, I guess, right?
Yeah, that sentence was probably written in Sarcastica.
I certainly hope so. But the Chromecast remains a very cheap, very good option that does a particular task very well. You know, I use it for Netflix and Hulu at this point, and you know, YouTube and other things. But I think it does what it does really well, and if they start to kind of stray from that, then maybe it would get a little bit lost. If you want a full home theater entertainment, you know, solution, then the Chromecast is not going to be that. So a nice little update to the Chromecast. Cool to see the audio, and I'm glad they're kind of sticking to their guns on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were interested in some sort of streaming device, either for your TV or your stereo or whatever, I mean, this is the thing to look at right now. It's just as cheap as it ever was. It's still cheaper than every other option. And especially if you are an Android user, this is, you know, pretty much a must-have accessory, and never more so than now, because they just redesigned it. It's the hardware design is a significant improvement. They added a lot of passive heating, so it doesn't get as hot as the old one, which, who cares? It's just living behind your TV anyway. But
I'm sure there are some people out there that, you know, like, well, I care because it overheated all the time.
Right. So if you had that problem, then, well, you can get a new one now. It's only $35. Or don't. Get an Apple TV. Get the new Apple TV. I'm going to.
So, Taylor, you're going to get a new Apple TV, but, you know, I think I'm going to stick with my old Chromecast because I don't really see any reason to upgrade. But either way, I think it's definitely time to turn on the afterburners.
Yeah, totally. Good point, Chris, that if you have a Chromecast and it's working fine, there's really no reason to upgrade at all because the old Chromecast get all of the new features.
Yeah, such is life with such a purpose-driven device, I feel.
Okay, I'm ready to turn on my afterburners. Wait, all do right. You have your Gin Fizz?
I have my Gin Fizz in hand. Are you buckled
okay,
in?
Okay, good. I never ask you if you have your Gin Fizz just because I assume you do.
Right.
Why else would you be asking me?
It took a few minutes to make, but the magic of podcasting allows me to stop, leave, make a Gin Fizz, come back, have it ready, and edit out all the silence in between.
You forgot to collaborate and listen, but everything else sounds great.
All right, well, let's kick off the afterburners. We've got some news from Roku. They're releasing the Roku 4, which is going to support 4K, which I assume they mean UHD video. And, you know, they'll have, it's an incremental improvement that will have a few other features, but that's probably the biggest flagship for now. So good to see them trucking along. I think there's still a really good kind of cross ecosystem option for people who don't necessarily want to buy into one or the other. So they continue to be good, and I'm glad to see they're getting 4K video and along with 802.11ac Wi-Fi, which is quite nice.
Yeah, they missed a perfect opportunity to call it the Roku 4K, which is a shame. Ooh. But they will have a curated collection of 4K video that's available on Roku services.
Right.
And they won't be the only ones supporting 4K video. TiVo has also announced the new Bolt box, which is the next generation TiVo box. It's almost like a postmodern Apple device. It's just this screenless, angled, rectangular prism that's bent in the middle. And it can do 4K video. It also is going to have some pretty crazy features, like being able to watch TV faster. Like you can watch it at 1.3 speed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it'll speed everything up so you can like watch talk shows faster. And then it also has pre-programmed automatic skipping of commercials for certain shows.
Right. That was a little weird that it's available only on certain shows. I'm not sure how they go about doing that.
Well, for live events and stuff, they don't block out the commercials in advance.
Oh, I see. I was thinking it was some kind of business deal.
So TiVo can't predict it.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking of some kind of business deal, but okay.
No, I don't think they made any big business deals.
All right. Well, Google, as of October 2nd, is officially splitting into its parent company and all of its subsidiaries. So as of October 2nd, which has happened already as of this podcast, then Google is Alphabet is the parent company of Google and many other subsidiaries that used to be just part of Google. So we talked about it previously, but that has actually happened now. So just wanted to note that passing.
Yeah, and they're making announcements now, like the new Nest Cam is not even branded as Google at all. It's right. Just Alphabet and Nest. Anyway, Apple is still producing things with the Beats label. They just came out with a new portable speaker that'll do Bluetooth and not AirPlay, but you'll be able to charge it with Apple's Lightning connector.
Oh, and I wanted it to have USB Type-C.
Yeah, this is this is going into a different ecosystem.
I guess, and so.
This Lightning versus USB Type-C.
Well, Lightning is catchier, I'll give you that much. So speaking of Apple and Apple devices, Apple has actually released El Capitan now. So again, this is something we talked about previously on the podcast, but it is now absolutely available to download on your Mac. So if you are that kind of person, you should download it and check it out and get the new stuff.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance yet, but...
You should do it.
Oh yeah, I'm meaning to.
All right, so with that, let's turn off the afterburners and let's get into some of the last stories of the night in the end user stories, at least since we were so top-heavy on top news this week. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how little there is to talk about with Android 6.0 Marshmallow. It's a little bit...
Yeah, my understanding is that it's kind of... it's a spit and polish kind of update. There's not a lot of new features, but they cleaned some stuff up. They made things more logical and intuitive, kind of like Apple did with iOS 8. You know, iOS 7 was so new and crazy that iOS 8, you know, really made it work like a real operating system.
Yeah, so, you know, I got it on my phone today, actually just a few hours ago. And yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, I turned it on. I noticed some of the typography on my lock screen was a different font. So I guess that's different.
Hey, I just got a new font too. Did you get San Francisco?
No, it's definitely not San Francisco.
Oh, you should try it, man. It's the best.
All right, I'll see if I can download that font file and load it up somehow. But so I always noticed this in Lollipop, Taylor. If you held down on the home button, or not the home button, basically the thing that opens your application list, you could if you held down on it, it would launch Google Now for some reason, unbeknownst to me. That doesn't really make any sense, but it would do it. And now you can actually, it doesn't do that. And this is actually something that has changed that is useful. And they changed it in the last version of Lollipop. But in Road to Android 6.0 Marshmallow, if you hold down on that button, it will open a screen and open your keyboard so that you can type and search for apps, which you were also able to do via the Google search bar. But I feel like it's kind of a nice addition to have that be the case. It's a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I mean, is it so it works kind of like Siri, where you just hold down the button and you get Google Now?
Well, no, that's how it, that's what it used to do. That's what that button used to do.
Right. Wait. Okay.
The button that opens your applications. It used to open Google Now for some reason, unbeknownst to me. But now it brings you to a screen which is ready made to search your app, your applications, and not the web.
Yeah.
So that's just a little tiny thing that I think is an example of something that's nice, that's really tiny, that they've changed.
Cool. Yeah, they're paying attention to the little details like
right.
that.
And that was actually not in Marshmallow. That was in the latest version of Lollipop, which was not but a few weeks ago.
You're not even reviewing Marshmallow? Like, Marshmallow is so unimportant that a a mid-cycle upgrade is more important to you?
Well, no. I thought that that was a nice little thing that has come along recently. And then I took the jump up to Marshmallow, and it's still there. So that's nice. So I think what you were thinking about is the Google Now integration with the home button. And that is certainly a little bit different. What you can do is, if you're in any application whatsoever, you can hold down on the home button and it will, Google Now will scan your screen for stuff and it will attempt to find relevant information on the web about the stuff. So for example, if you're looking at IMDb, let's say, for some actor in iZombie, and you want to know recent news about that person or something like that, you can hold down on the home button, and Google Now will scan your screen in and give you information about whatever was on the screen. So I think that's pretty nice. You know, it's not going to explode the world, but it's a nice little addition to Android.
It's a little creepy, but in that Google way, where
that's
true. Creepy, but it's for you. It's for you.
Yeah, it's your creepiness, Taylor. You have to own it.
We're totally not doing anything with that information.
So that's probably the biggest feature in Marshmallow. There are a couple other little tiny ones, but. For the most part, it's more of the same, but they've polished a bunch of little corners. So I'm sure I'm going to discover some of the polish as I go forward and say, oh, okay, that's a little different. But it's not something that a lot of people are going to notice. Now, one little bit that you might notice, they're going to be tweaking the way the battery works. So you're apparently going to be able to... they're calling this doze mode, but they're going to be a little bit smarter about how they background the application. So in theory, at least, you should see some kind of battery increase if you're moving to Marshmallow. So that'll be pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, it doesn't get more important than that.
Yeah.
Although, if Google promises to increase battery life on like every Android phone that gets it, and the people who don't get an increase are going to feel... grifted.
Yeah, and they're also changing how the permissions work a little bit. You get a little bit more control over that. You know, they've got native support for fingerprint readers now. Again, little tiny little polished stuff, like you're saying, and it's just nice nice to see them kind of fill in the gaps with this release. So little
stuff.
They
didn't have support for fingerprint readers?
No, so that was something that other manufacturers had to graft on after the fact.
How long have they been doing that? A while.
Yeah, it's. I think Samsung was probably one of the first to have a fingerprint sensor in their device. So they must have written that themselves.
It's got to be like 4 years.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just a new way to surface fingerprint information to developers or if it's the entirety of fingerprint support.
But, oh, maybe it's just like an API.
Yeah, it could just be. I'm not entirely sure of that. So anyway, little stuff like that. Nice to see. Again, it's not gonna blow the world up, but good to fill in the gaps every once in a while. So, Lifehacker compiled a list of every single phone that will be updated to Marshmallow. So, if you care about these things, you will probably want to go look at this list and see if your device is on there.
Lifehacker's the best.
Yeah, they do stuff like that, and that is a lot of work. So, good on them for that. All right, so I don't want to spend long on this, but we've got one story which is just plain weird. Amazon has decided to not sell Apple TV and Chromecast anymore. There's been a lot of speculation. Amazon has said some words that didn't sound exactly true about why they're doing this, and it's to decrease customer confusion.
Which, no. Yeah, that's not it.
That's not it. Yeah, we know that's not it.
Well, actually, no, I can see how they mean it that way.
I can see how they could convince themselves that that was true.
Well, you know, to be honest, it is something that I've heard a lot of people are confused about. Like, a lot of people have heard about things happening between Apple TV and Amazon. And the history of it is pretty simple. I mean, Chris, you know this, but maybe some of our listeners don't. Because Amazon wants to sell stuff. And anything you try to sell on an Apple device, Apple wants money for.
Right.
Whether it's a product, a book, a piece of music, an app, or a TV show, or a movie. Apple's going to take a cut if you buy it on their device. So for that reason, Amazon makes iOS apps where you can watch stuff, but you still have to go on a computer to buy stuff. And so for that reason, they don't have an Apple TV app because right. It would be too complicated for their customers to buy something on
right. It's kind
Amazon
of a,
and then watch it on Apple TV.
It's kind of an unfortunate, unforeseen consequence of the business model that Apple has decided to take up and that everybody in the industry has been taking up. So it's kind of interesting to see this kind of use case that's on the fringe play out.
Right. So what's really happening is Amazon is saying, we're not selling the Apple TV because it doesn't make us any money.
Right. And that's a huge reversal for them. And I think it's a poor choice if they're objective is to support their customers and people that want to buy stuff from them. I really think it's wrong. It's a step in the wrong direction, as well as it itself being wrong. And they've typically been a relatively transparent retailer, other than some of their So they had some shady business with the Kindles a while back there. But for the most part, they've been a pretty transparent retailer where they were a retailer where you knew you could go get something, likely cheaper than elsewhere, and they would probably have it. And this means that now we're starting to get into an era where we have to remember if Amazon refuses to sell something or not. And if they continue in that direction, I feel like they're going to start to lose that mind share of them being the everything store. And I think that would be a bad direction for them, and I think that would be a bad direction for their customers. So all around, I think this is a terrible idea. And we'll see if they... I wonder if they'll go back on it at some point, and I don't know, depending on negotiations with Apple and that kind of thing. But for the moment, terrible for the end user.
It's not really that bad. I mean, as people can find an Apple TV. It's not that hard.
That's true. That's true.
I mean,
I guess
come on.
I'm.
Have you been to an Apple store?
I guess I'm more upset about the precedent it's setting than these two things actually not being available.
That Amazon might not have everything.
Right. They're the everything store, Taylor.
I guess it is. It is pretty unnerving when you put it that way.
It's weird, yeah. I get cat litter on Amazon, but no Chromecast anymore. I've got, Taylor, I've gotten two Chromecasts on Amazon. One for traveling.
Oh, nice.
But no longer. I think you're right. Maybe I'm being dramatic, but them no longer being the everything store, at least in these two products cases, I think is really worrisome. And I hope that trend doesn't further. So
it probably will.
Well, time will tell. And of course, you already know, being the Futurist Prime and all, so that's good. But tell us how we can save the future in your green tech story of the week.
Mm. Yeah, this is a pretty cool story. This is definitely for the home on listeners in the office, because today is about green smart home tech. This is a new, really slick-looking, low-power device that monitors your water usage, right? So you got smart home is controlling your heating, your blinds, your lights, your sound system. But, you know, the amount of water you use should be monitored too, just so that you know and that you can be conscious of it. So there is this new device called the Oasis, which is spelled OASYS. And it's got a smartphone app and it's got a glowing light with a screen that sort of alerts you to how much water you've used the day. And it can tell if something is wrong with your pipes or if somebody's taking a really long shower.
Yeah, I like the idea. You know, it's like if you are not aware of it, you can't know to change your habit. And this would at very least make you aware of the week-to-week variabilities of your water usage. And, you know, maybe that would inspire you to conserve a little bit. And also, you know, at least in my apartment building, I'm not paying for water, but a lot of homeowners do pay for water, and you could potentially use this to decrease your bill as well as whatever green side effects that may have.
A lot of homeowners run on wells and they only have so much water.
Yeah,
so it
even better
them,
yeah,
to conserve. Anyway, so that's why I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that is
because
neat.
You know, it's another aspect. It's an important aspect of your home consumption, and it's something that you should be able to track. So this is a device that does that. It's on Kickstarter right now.
Oh, okay, it's a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
All right, well,
so it may never happen at all.
It may never happen.
But it's a good idea.
But good luck to them.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a lot of this going forward. I think home automation is really starting to hit its stride in a way that it hasn't in the past. And we're going to see a lot of these kind of measurement devices coming out. So that'll be an interesting future to navigate. All right. Well, I have a tip of the week, and I have an app pick of the week before we get out of here, Taylor. I went Googling earlier to how to force an update to Android, and good old Lifehacker came in, and they gave me some instructions on how to force an update. And it's weird. So you open up the app screen in the settings, and you clear some data from the Google Play service, and then you check for updates again, and it just appeared. And that, I couldn't believe it actually worked. So they like to roll these updates out over time. I knew my phone was on the list to get it, and so I did this, and I, like I said, it worked. So I just wanted to pass that along as the tip of the week. That is how you can force an update if you know it's available for your particular device. So, I also have an app pick of the week, and this is a fairly large release, Taylor, and I'm sure you care little for it, but this is FIFA 16, which is the latest version of the official licensed FIFA soccer game, and I've been playing it on my phone quite a bit. There's also console versions as well, but I wanted to pick the Android and iOS versions of FIFA 16. Now, the game is really kind of intense. It definitely, like, heats up my phone, And it is playable on my phone. There's a lot of complaints about it being laggy, but if you've got a if you've got a relatively modern phone, I'd probably be able to handle it. And the gameplay for this mobile game is absolutely incredible when looking at it compared to the last year's FIFA game and looking at last year's console game. It's more along the lines of last year's console game than anything else. And I'm kind of blown away by what they're able to do with the graphics and the gameplay and everything. It's really a substantial update to that game. So I've been playing that, been enjoying that, and it's been burning my phone up a little bit, but it works. It's fun to play. So that's my app pick of the week.
What engine do they use for the Android graphics?
So I don't know. I'm actually wondering if they're sharing code between Android and Xbox, because it is really similar at this point. I'm nearly sure they're doing something to share code between all of the platforms or something like that, because it's really quite impressive what they've done. Again, okay. if your phone can handle it, my phone is right on the edge of handling it.
Oh, I think my phone can handle it.
Yeah, I'm sure yours could. So I know you're not the biggest soccer fan, but it's available for iOS and it's free. So maybe give it a shot.
It's free.
Yeah, it's free with like in-app purchases if you choose to do so.
Oh, good. So I can play it without giving Sepp Blatter any money.
Yes. Well.
Ah, great.
I'm sure they have agreements.
You should have led with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they have agreements. So.
Yep. Based on the in-app purchases, I never do those.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's really well done. So that's the app pick. So we're going to run without a kicker since we're running a bit long with all of the crazy news we've had to cover this week.
That was plenty kicker, Chris. It's FIFA.
Yeah, good point. There is only one, except for there's two.
Except everyone in soccer is a kicker.
Well, I was thinking, so FIFA 15 is still in the store for whatever reason, which is interesting.
Oh. So make sure you pick up the right one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, well, Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you, perhaps involving FIFA in some way and their insane boardroom, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they should probably make a new Facebook GIF pic and hold up a sign with my name on it in their profile on Facebook in a video. It has to be in a video.
Right, yeah. We didn't talk about it, but you can do that now.
Yes. Anyway, so that's how they should contact with me. But I guess if they don't want to go through all that effort, they could write to @TaylorPhone on Twitter. I might see it.
I was thinking they should hold up a sign of their Twitter handle on Facebook, and then you could see it.
How would I know to look for it?
That's a good point. So they'd still have to tweet you, I guess.
Right.
Okay, well, that works. So if you wanted to get at me, I am @ChrisHaleBarnes on Twitter. So let us know what you think of the show and so on. So, Taylor, it's been a long enough show this week. I think it is definitely time to get out of here. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. You can find some more information, including the show notes, with links to everything that we talked about in the show, over at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THEND USR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0 and the always fabulous Home On. You can also send us some feedback. We've got an email, theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. Together, our account is @theenduser. You can join us in the chat room as we record the show live nearly every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Moth.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.